Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome, SJS, on this Wednesday. Great to have all of you on board as we roll through this week together. We've had a couple fun weeks here, without a doubt. We have had, along the way, Patrick Chambers for an extended with him, Bill O'Brien yesterday, Dave Paulson, Mike Muscala. We're going to continue that role today with Tim Doyle from BTN to talk with Timmy D. Recently just got married. Now, personally, I'd rather talk to her and ask her just straight out exactly what were you thinking. It's one thing I've talked to Tim many times. Tim actually started his basketball career at St. John's, and he transferred to Northwestern. And now he's gone into the broadcasting realm. And I've told Tim many times, I said, Tim, you know, I said, you know what I really like about you? He said, what's that? I said, you are you on the air. You are not somebody different on the air. He said, you are the same off the air as you are on, and it works. He's not a phony by any stretch of the imagination. And he's fun. And we'll talk to him a little bit later. And he loves the ponies. He and Girardi get along so well together. I remember Tim was here about a month ago. He and Rick Pizzo, and Tim brought one of his buddies from Manhattan, and it's Tim, his buddy, Rick Pizzo, Dick Girardi, and I had dinner together. We had a blast. And Pizzo was going, Rick was going to play golf at Baltusrol because his father-in-law had an inn. He's going to play at Baltusrol in New Jersey and also play at one of the great golf courses outside of Philly. Timmy D was going to Monmouth Racetrack. and I was doing the show with Kevin. How are you, sport?
I'm wonderful.
Well, he's not the best color guy in the business for nothing.
good.
I couldn't resist that.
Again, still one of those movies that even today makes me laugh.
Oh, always will. 800-795-9565 is our number, 800-795-9565. And don't forget, we're in the beautiful Sunbury Motors studio here at the Chateau. Jason Johnson, by the way, said that on his bucket list, yes, you omitted the part about wanting to be in the Chateau.
I did. I did omit that part. I shortened it up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about the bucket list. No, you were mad. You took it out. You know, your anger spills over into this show so often.
Gee, I don't know why.
Exactly my sentiment. I don't know why either. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for Above the Noise. Here's Dan Patrick.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on Pre-Auction Blowout. So let the sizzling summer sales event get you fired up. Like a 2005 Ford Freestar Wagon SES, just $7,991. A 2005 Lexus ES 330. Call for our lowest price promise, 888-536-8017. 2011 Ford Fiesta Hatchback SE, only 16,000 miles and factory warranty, $13,426. Open the top and get rolling with a 2011 Jeep Wrangler four-wheel drive Rubicon, $26,992, and a 2011 Ram 1500 Crew Cab Laramie. Call for our lowest price promise, 888-536-8017. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Great to have you with us on this Wednesday, the day before the 4th of July. Hope you have a safe and happy one. And then we'll be at Pocono International Raceway on Friday for KevFest 2013.
I haven't been able to sleep all week.
You'd be shocked how I've slept peacefully and with no issue.
Not a bit. Wouldn't be shocked a bit. Excited for tomorrow. Sit anywhere in the unrestricted grandstands. Be able to watch through 220 miles an hour down the front straight.
One at a time.
No, I would imagine you're going to see teams work together a little bit here as they get cranked up, trying to figure out how to make those passes that they did at Indy, or to see if that Indy style pass will work at Pocono.
Well, that's exciting. All right. So
you're not going to rain on my parade because I'm just ready.
Oh, my goodness.
24 years in the making for me.
That's true. I could see the excitement there. I can understand that.
I really didn't explain to you the real reason I'm excited. And I don't think I explained it to anybody listening as well. What happened in 1990...
Everybody, sandwich time.
In 1990, my father and I had planned to go to the race. Unfortunately, they didn't have it that year. That would have been the first year we would have gone to the race, and that was the year they didn't have it. So that's why it's really exciting.
So your father, knowing that they bagged this thing, dangled a carrot in front of you.
He did not know that.
Dangled a carrot in front of young Kevin. Is it, son, I'll take you to an IndyCar. Oh, I'm sorry. They're not running it this year.
We had planned on going in 1989 because that was the year I graduated from high school. We had planned on going that summer, but I ended up having to work that weekend. So we thought, well, we'll do it the next year. And that never happened.
I think the dude took you for a ride.
Well, he was known for doing some fun things like that every now and then. But no, he wanted to see this as much as I did, so.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
Now, your son is excited about going.
Yes, he absolutely is. I do have some friends that may make it as well. They're trying to work it around some all-star baseball games.
Acquaintances.
No, they're friends.
Really?
You're an acquaintance. Most people are friends.
However you wish to refer to me as.
So, an interesting night last night in baseball.
Yeah, no hitter.
And I actually believe I have... I think I have the audio of said call.
I'd hope so.
But it may take me a minute to find it. Ah, here we go. Here it is.
On the ground to third for Frazier. He did it!
Oh! Holy Moses!
Homer Bailey, second career no-hitter.
You get a funny feeling that was the hometown call?
Probably.
Yeah, that was definitely the hometown call.
Actually, the game was on TV last night. It was on national TV.
Yes. Yeah, there are...
It was on MLB Network last night.
There were a couple of different opportunities there on that particular call, but I went with the hometown version with Matt Vasgersian and Sean Casey.
No, that was the MLB.
They were doing the MLB game last night. I'm sorry, I got that mixed up. You're right. They were doing the MLB game last night.
This has become a painful segment.
Let's see. Do I have the?
I don't know.
Oh, I do have the Marty Brenneman. Here we go.
Fabulous.
Well, maybe. I don't.
This is going better than I thought.
Oh, here we go. Here,
the right-hander kicks, and he throws. And here's a ground ball to Todd Frazier. He's up, he's throwing, and Bailey has a no-hitter. Homer Bailey has no-hit the San Francisco Giants, the 16th no-hitter in Cincinnati Reds history. They are crowding around. They are bouncing up and down around the mound. Everybody out of the dugout. The relief pitchers are racing in from the bullpen. Caps are being thrown. Gloves are being thrown. The crowd is roaring here at Great American Ballpark.
That's the veteran right there.
Well done.
That is the veteran right there. Marty Brenneman, been there, done that, called a perfect game in my life, Tom Browning.
Then I think
very well done.
Then I think the other interesting news was Jonathan Papelbon's comments on Puig being a Hall of Famer.
No, not a Hall of Famer.
I'm sorry, All-Star game. I'm sorry.
The guy's got a month in the big leagues. I don't even think he's got a month in the big leagues. And, you know, you're comparing him to this and that, and you're going to say he's going to make the All-Star team. And it, I mean, that's a joke.
Tell me how you really feel. Well, actually, he kind of did go on a little bit more.
To me, it really does an injustice to the veteran players, you know, that have been in the game for 8, 9, 10+ years. And it kind of does them an injustice because those guys have worked so hard to stay there. And so I don't know. I'm just not a fan of it.
That was on the MLB radio network.
Yeah, but you know what? We're finding there's pushback from this. There is pushback. I mean, Clint Hurdle basically said the same thing.
I don't understand why.
Why?
Why shouldn't he be in the All-Star game? The numbers are from this year. That's what the All-Star game's about.
Yeah,
it's your numbers from the year.
They're saying the numbers are for 5 weeks.
Well, that's a pretty darn good 5 weeks. I've seen guys with worse averages and statistics in the month of April still make the Hall of Fame or still make the All-Star game.
Right. You asked why they're pushing back. I'm giving you the answer as to why they're pushing back. I
mean, you're not arguing the fact. I'm sorry. You're right.
I'm the one that says he should be in. I'm saying he should be in.
I just want him to shut up and pitch. That's all I want. Don't be the soundbite king. Just pitch. Just save games.
I hear you.
It's good to be in the league. Happy to help the ball. Hope I can help the ball club. You know, learn the lines from Bull Durham, all right? That's all. I know it's not fun. I know nobody wants to hear it. But when you're having an okay year and it's not an outstanding year, don't sit there and start saying why a guy should or shouldn't be in the All-Star game. Just come out and say, listen, you know, he's had a really good run of it. If they put him in the All-Star game, then congratulations.
I understand.
It's boring. Nobody wants to hear that. I understand that. But you're not having a humongous year where you can be colorful.
I understand.
Sorry, I got on a little bit of a rant there.
It's what you do. What you do.
I could be wrong.
You could be.
As Dennis Miller used to say, sorry, I didn't mean to get on a rant, but I could be wrong.
I understand.
Well, you're just smiling right now because he's a Philly and he's not doing it in a Boston uniform.
No, I mean, I think I want the Red Sox to reacquire him.
Yeah, I'm almost to the point where you can have him for the right price. And it may not be that expensive after all.
We'll come back. We'll talk with Josh Moyer of ESPN.com, Tim Doyle next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you back. And we're going to talk some Penn State football. We're going to bring in Josh Moyer here, who wrote 8 Keys to a National Championship from ESPN.com. Josh, welcome. It's great to have you on the show.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Steve. Good to be here.
Josh, give us the gist of what you and some of the conclusions you came to and the avenue you took.
We had Michael Rothstein kind of look into the seven national champions and the criteria they all had in common. And what he found, what we found is that the last seven national champions all had eight things in common. Among them, finishing high in the number of sacks, for example, averaging 35 points or more a game. You know, things like that. So I tried to take a look at just how close Penn State was to meeting that. It was a criteria. And, basically seeing how close Penn State is to competing with the Alabamas of the college football world. And, I mean, really what it came down to was maybe Penn State can meet three of those eight this year. And in future seasons, all of them look pretty good. The hardest part is for Penn State, two of those eight will have to meet is a high passing efficiency, and Matt McGloin finished behind some other guys because he threw short passes. So Penn State needs to throw a little bit longer passes, get a few more bigger plays, and they definitely need to increase that average rushing yardage by about 80 yards a game. So that's really what I think is preventing it, at least from what we saw, making it into one of those Alabamas.
Give us the eight parts of the criteria.
Okay, well, let me see if I can remember this off the top of my head here. But among them was finishing in the top 40 in sacks, which Penn State's done, I think, seven out of the last 8 years. Another was being ranked in the top 30 in passing efficiency. I think Penn State might have been number 49 this past year, which was a little surprising. Another one was having a player drafted in the first round the next season. I'm trying to think what else there was. Among other things, was basically just again scoring 35 points a game. And, that's half of them. So you can kind of see State being among the best when it comes to both sides of the ball, which isn't surprising. We're just kind of seeing those actual numbers.
Yeah, it does not lose a non-conference game in the regular season. Have a player combined for at least 10 rushing or receiving touchdowns. Have at least one player selected in the first round. You just mentioned that. Top 40 in sacks, you mentioned that. 37th or better in passing efficiency. 15th or better in rushing defense. And usually Penn State's really good with that. And 38th or better in rushing offense, all except Florida in 2006, ranked 16th or better, which is something Jack Ham talks about all the time. He said, I know it's a pass-happy world. He said, you still need to run the football.
Yeah, and I was really surprised when we took a look at this. I mean, it seemed like it was really slanted toward rushing teams. It was great if you obviously had a great passing offense, but we found it didn't really matter if you threw for 2,000 yards or 4,000. It was all about passing efficiency and rushing for 214 yards or more a game. I think for me, at least, that was the most surprising part of it all.
Exactly, and it's an interesting... Okay, let's take Alabama, for example. Do they meet all eight?
Yeah. All the teams that won the national title, they met every one of those.
Wow. Impressive. Penn State, of course, reworked back in January Bill O'Brien's contract, and it was put out on the website in its entirety for everybody to see. Your thoughts on the reworking of that contract and your thoughts on the fact that we see every clause in the contract?
Well, I mean, I think it's obviously good for transparency that we're able to see everything. I don't think a lot of people were too surprised when Bill O'Brien got a raise. And quite frankly, I think they could pay him $4 million base salary instead of $2 million and be pretty difficult to argue when he's named Coach of the Year by just about everyone. But, I mean, I definitely thought the most interesting part was the change in the nature of him leaving for the NFL. Obviously, that was the big story. The way it's designed now, it does allow him to be able to, leave a little bit easier. Those buyouts aren't going to be quite as excessive as they were before. So if he wants to leave after 2 years, it's going to be a whole lot easier than it was before. So I think that was probably the big story when that contract came out. I'm not saying he's going to leave, but it certainly makes it a lot easier if he wants to.
Yeah, that was the big story with it. Now it's moving forward. This is the second straight year that Bill O'Brien will have a new quarterback that has to learn his system. It's last year it was Matt McGloin. This year it's either Tyler Ferguson, who's at least had a spring practice, and Christian Hackenberg, who hasn't thrown a ball into practice yet. Your thoughts on what that means to Penn State's upcoming season?
Yeah, well, I think, Steve, everybody jumps the gun on this a little bit because they think, hey, Matt McGloin had just as much time to learn this offense, and he did fine. So Tyler Ferguson and Christian Hackenberg, you know, they'll do even better because they have the stronger arm and everything. But I just don't think that's right because you had Matt McGloin at least. You know, he had seen game time. You know, he had experienced pressure. And he had become familiar with Big Ten defenses. He knew what to expect. You know, Christian Hackenberg is coming off of playing high school ball. And historically, freshman quarterbacks fare miserably in their first year. I mean, Matthew Stafford had twice as many picks as touchdowns. And he enrolled early. You know, Tyler Ferguson obviously playing a much smaller level of competition in JUCO ball. So I really think that's going to be the key to Penn State this season. And I don't think that's a big leap to say that. But I think both guys are going to struggle in the early going, no matter who Bill goes with. And I think the future is bright next year, the year after that, the year after that. But I think this year is kind of key. You know, I don't think they're going to be as successful as Matt McGloin. You know, you're not going to see 24 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. But I think, you know, having a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio this year would absolutely blow expectations out of the water.
The 65 scholarship part, Penn State's right now in the neighborhood already. Now, they're allowed to have, if they wish, 85 scholarships this year. But, Josh, you and I both know that's impractical. You can't go from 85 to 65 in 1 year. That actually does far more damage to the program than a gradual reduction does. What does 65, moving forward, it's unpredictable. This is obviously water a lot of people don't know a lot about. And I've heard coaches complain when they only have 83 scholarships, let alone 65. How tough a read is Penn State going to be moving forward because of the 65?
I mean, I think that's the hardest hitting part of the sanctions. I mean, when it comes to recruiting, you know, the kids pay more attention to those bowl games. But, yeah, I mean, it's those scholarships. When you have, 25% fewer players than every other team you're going against on scholarship, it's going to be a lot harder. I think one of the positives that's coming out of that is, you know, Penn State's been able to, you know, focus on a fewer number of players, and I think that's probably helped get them better recruits than it would if they had to recruit 25 players. But absolutely, depth is an issue. I mean, it's like whack-a-mole, Steve. I mean, you know, you fix one problem, the defensive backs last year, and then, you know, bam, you know, now linebackers is an issue. So they got, you know, they have two linebackers. They should have, you know, Zade coming back next year. But now it's kind of like, okay, now we have to focus on offensive linemen. So it seems like every year, you know, they're really going to have to focus on one position, you know, when it comes to recruiting. And if they kind of stumble when it comes to recruiting that critical position, like offensive line next year,
right,
I think that's when Penn State's going to have some issues.
And as I talked with Bill O'Brien about this the other day, and I asked him about forming a positional balance in recruiting, because every coach has their idea of positional balance. Joe and his staff had their positional balance as to how they work, but of course they had 85 to work with. Bill has his idea of what he's comfortable with positional balance. Everybody has their own way of getting there as to what their comfort level happens to be. What's the degree of difficulty with 65 scholarships of finding a positional balance? Because obviously depth is an issue.
Yeah. I mean, well, you kind of see, I think part of Bill's philosophy is trying to get the best players available regardless of position. I mean, you need certain guys at certain positions. But I think once they meet that criteria, I mean, Penn State took 3 wide receivers in this 2014 class. You know, I don't think anybody saw that coming. I don't even think Penn State saw that coming, you know, a few months before. But, I mean, I think that helps Penn State in the end because they arguably have the best trio of 2014 receivers in the country. And when you have guys like Christian Hackenberg and, you know, Michael O'Connor coming in, you know, they have someone to throw the ball to. So, yeah, position balance is important. I mean, you know, there's no denying that. But, you know, I think, you know, getting those big-name players, getting those you know, guys who run in the 4.4s, and, you know, they have one 2015 guy who ran a 4.39, who, you know, Penn State's number one on his list, Kareem Ali Jr. You know, I think that's going to help Penn State, you know, overcome this a little bit. Because one thing Bill O'Brien's constantly said is they can't miss on recruits. They can't miss. They have to bat 1,000. So, I mean, it's great if you need four defensive backs, but if three of them don't pan out, you know, you're in trouble. So I think the fact that, hey, they're taking fewer recruits, but they're getting guys who should pan out, like a Troy Vincent Jr., who might be the smartest cornerback in the country right now when it comes to, you know, leading offenses and making adjustments on defense. I think those are exactly the types of players Penn State needs to achieve that balance.
That's the other part, too, is that if you have 25, and I hate to put it in these terms. I mean, I hate using this, you know, because we're talking about young men here. But say you, quote, miss on 40%. That means you still hit on 15 out of the 25. With 15 scholarships max, you can't have that ratio. You have to be 75%. You have to hit on 12 out of 15 probably.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, talking to O'Brien and talking to some of the other coaches, I mean, what they're trying to do to avoid that is, I mean, they're really doing their research about all of these guys. I mean, it's not just, Oh, you know, we'll talk to the kid, he seems nice, we're done. It's, okay, we're going to talk to the principal, we're going to talk to a teacher or two, we want to make sure this kid doesn't have any academic problems, you know, he's not going to be a troublemaker, you know, what's his work ethic look like? And, you know, that's why you see them taking kids, you know, DeAndre Tompkins' father is Marine,
right.
Nick Scott is probably the politest kid I've ever met. You know, you just have all these guys, you know, Adam Brenneman, incredibly hard worker.
Right.
You know, because O'Brien has really stressed, you know, hey, we're not just trying to find the 15 best athletes there. We want to find the 15 guys who can, you know, play together too, guys who complement each other.
Exactly.
So I think that's kind of what's making Penn State unique in this respect because, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you can't miss. So,
right.
You know, you try to find those guys who, you know, are going to swing and hit the ball, those guys who, you know, aren't going to give up and, you know, are going to, you know, be calling, you know, Fitzgerald at 5 a.m. trying to get to the gym early.
Right.
Now, those are the kids you need at this point.
Well, two things. Number one, I don't think anybody's done more research than this staff has done on recruits for the reasons you talked about. I mean, they have worked incredibly hard to try and find exactly the right fit. And number two, Josh, if you call Fitzgerald, he's already at the gym. 3:30.
Well, I did have Allen Robinson told me he did wake up fit, you know, a couple times early because he'd want to, you know, run to the weight room at like 5 a.m. But Fitz was right there with him, and he'd work out with Robinson.
Of course, I mean, he
honestly,
would.
I think the kids want to come to Penn State to play for to work with Fitzgerald, right? Almost as much as they want to come to Penn State to work with O'Brien.
Yeah, no, he's been a huge plus with what's going on. They have the Live for Life coming up next week. What's intrigued you about the Penn State beat?
I'd say the varying opinions. I mean, you know, from people outside of the program, I get asked, you know, what do Penn State fans think about Joe Paterno compared to Bill O'Brien? And, you know, I don't think it's, you know, a black and white thing. I'm kind of surprised by, you know, just how different all the opinions are. You know, I think that's kind of what's caught me the most, that there seems to be very little ground. But, you know, despite all that, you know, you still have Penn State fans, you know, 95,000 coming at a time to see the stadium. And, you know, I just wasn't sure what was going to happen when the sanctions were announced. I started this job a little bit after that, and I didn't know what was going to happen. And I've just really been, you know, kind of surprised in a good way by, you know, everybody's kind of stuck by the university. And I know that's really hit home with, you know, players and recruits as well. I talked to a guy by the name of Sterling Jenkins. He's a 6'8" offensive lineman who said walking downtown, seeing all those, you know, we support Penn State football signs, you know, really made him, you know, think a lot, you know, it really made him feel good. So, you know, I think stuff like that, I mean, if you mention Penn State, at least for me, you know, those are some of the first things I think of.
Josh, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for the time, and we hope to talk to you many more times down the road.
Definitely my pleasure, Steve. You have a good one.
Josh Moore joining us today from ESPN.com. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Tim Doyle, next half hour from Big Ten Network. Meanwhile, we turn to the Prince of Pocono. 48 hours from now, we'll be there.
I was just watching a bases loaded, two out, 4-4 walk-off home run in a minor league baseball game. It was the Lansing Lugnuts and the Great Lakes Loons. By the way, some of the worst nicknames for baseball ever. Hits a he forgets to touch the base. It ends up not being a walk-off at all.
Right. Well, no. What
missed
happened was
a base.
No, he didn't miss a base. That's not what happened.
What happened then? It looked like he missed the base.
No, he gets the hit. Okay. All the guys run out of the dugout. They score. They win. They're jumping up and down. The whole deal. The guy who was on first base was supposed to go to second, turned around and started jumping up and down with them, thinking the game was over. They threw to second. It was a force play.
See, I thought he missed the base at first, the way the video looked. See,
no.
And by the way, I misspoke. I said home run. It was going to be a walk-off
single up the middle.
Right. It was going to be a walk-off
single.
No,
the guy at first didn't bother running to second. He turned around and started celebrating with the dude.
That's worse.
It is worse. And they lost 5-4-10.
And actually, you know what? The problem was I didn't watch far enough. The second baseman's holding the ball on the bag, waiting and waiting, and then he goes. And then I guess he goes over and tags him.
It's over.
Wow.
It's a force play. Because it's a force play, the run doesn't count.
See, I didn't watch it. We came back from break. I thought he missed first base, by the way the write-up was that I was looking at. So, wow. That's even worse. Yikes.
Yeah, so that's how they lost. Lansing Lugnuts. Michigan State plays some of their games, by the way, at this ballpark. Michigan State's ballpark is not that great. Every once in a while, they'll play at the Lansing Lugnuts Stadium, minor league ballpark. I think they're the Toronto Blue Jays.
They are a Blue Jays affiliate, yes.
Yeah, so.
But the Lugnuts, that's almost as bad as the Dodgers affiliate. They were playing the Great Lakes Loons.
Yes, the Great Lakes Loons. That was the team that won the game. So, yeah, they won. Yusiel Puig, he should be in the All-Star game. Jonathan Papelbon says no. Clint Hurdle says no. But here's the problem. I have been as much of a steadfast traditionalist as anybody for a long time. And 10 years ago, I would have answered this question differently. No. He's only been in the game, what, 28 days, 28 games? So why should a guy after 28 games be in the All-Star game? I think when you see the New York Yankees television ratings down 40%, 4-0, you see attendance off, Sunday night baseball ratings are off. Fox Baseball Network ratings are off. You have to do something to put some juice into this thing. And sometimes, tradition be damned. You have to do something about it. Like, this kid tried 8 different times to defect from Cuba and get here. 8 times. Tried to do so on a Cuban baseball European trip, even. But he's right now on a losing team, one of the more dynamic players and personalities in the game at the moment. If this is supposed to be an all-star game for the fans where they vote, you know, and they may get a chance to vote the guy in anyway because that last spot's voted in, which I would prefer to see happen instead of having him picked by the manager. It's just the kind of jumpstart the all-star game needs. Because right now the All-Star game is just, I don't care about the home field advantage in the World Series. It's a meaningless exhibition game, and it's transitioned from a special midsummer classic because there weren't as many games on to having a plethora of games on, and now it just is lost in the wash. This guy at least put some juice into it. Next half hour, Tim Doyle, Big Ten Network, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.